Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. January is National Slavery and Human Trafficking Awareness Month. Human trafficking sounds like something that happens in other countries or in big cities when it does occur in the U.S. But women and men are being trafficked right here in Pennsylvania for sex or labor. In fact, Pennsylvania had the seventh most trafficking reports in the nation in 2017. Laws have been enacted and more are being proposed. It is the topic of our conversation today. Joining us is Jennifer Storm, Pennsylvania's victim advocate. Jennifer Storm, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Scott.
Also, Rhonda Hendrickson is Vice President of Programs with the Harrisburg YWCA, the Greater Harrisburg YWCA. Rhonda Hendrickson, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
On the phone, we have Shay Rhodes, Director of Villanova's Law Institute to Address Commercial Sexual Exploitation. Shay Rhodes, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you have a question or comment about human trafficking, give us a call. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Shay Rhodes, I'm going to start with you. Let's define human trafficking. What is it?
If we're talking about sex trafficking, it's the illegal sale of human beings. If it's for children, you don't need force, fraud, and coercion. And if adults, you do. And for labor trafficking, it's, being forced, defrauded, or coerced into providing labor services.
Now, the percentages say that around 80% of trafficking involves sex and about 20% of labor. How often is it occurring here in Pennsylvania? Jennifer Storm, let me ask you that question. Start off with, you see victims all the time. How often is this happening in Pennsylvania?
It's unfortunately been one of those statistics that we've had a really hard time grappling with, mainly because it is the most underreported crime. And I know that Rhonda can probably speak a little bit more to our regional. They cover the 12-county area around us. But it's been really hard to get good, solid statistics around this. But we know it's happening. We know it's happening with a degree of frequency that should alarm everyone in Pennsylvania.
When you say we know it's happening, how do you know it's happening?
Shay can talk about the statistical research that Villanova has done, and she can probably give us some better clarity on numbers.
Shay, are you there? What about those numbers?
Sure. Again, my institute focuses on commercial sexual exploitation and sex trafficking. So we have been tracking since 2014 in September, when our comprehensive human trafficking law went into effect. To date, we've been able to track 33 convictions throughout the entire Commonwealth. 26 cases have been withdrawn, an additional 4 charged and then ultimately withdrawn for whatever reason, and then 14 additional cases have moved from our state court over to federal court in either the western, middle, or eastern districts. Now, that's just prosecutions for the crime of human trafficking. And again, we've just requested our numbers from the Administrative Office of Pennsylvania Courts for the year 2018, but we have been keeping an eye on the, we want to double check and make sure that our numbers are accurate, but to date we've been able to track 33 convictions statewide since the law went into effect.
Ronald, I'm going to ask you about regionally here in just a moment, but something you just mentioned between federal and state prosecutions. Human trafficking, we know that this is something that happens across state lines. Why is this a state offense in some cases, but a federal in others? I imagine that the federal has something to do with crossing state lines, but what's the difference?
Well, there really isn't a difference, and I just want to be very clear. You actually do not need movement for the crime of trafficking to take place. Trafficking can happen, for example, in one hotel room without transportation ever happening. The crime of smuggling is something that gets confused with the crime of trafficking, and that's when someone is smuggled over the U.S. border into the U.S., maybe for the, crime of sex or labor trafficking to happen, but the movement is not necessary either for the federal crime or for the state crime. I think that ultimately the decision of whether or not to take a case federally or state depends on, you know, the federal prosecutor's office, talking with whichever county district attorney's office and seeing which jurisdiction the case should happen in. I do know that on December 23rd, 2018, so just a couple of weeks ago, Act 130, which is our safe harbor for sexually exploited children law that passed last session and went into effect, does give the jurisdiction over the crime of trafficking also to our state attorney general's office. They did not, up until that time, have concurrent jurisdiction with the district attorneys in the 67 counties. So it's really critical that state prosecutors and federal prosecutors talk to one another and determine what's, you know, better for the case of a federal prosecution or a state prosecution. I do know that the federal government has mandatory minimums if someone is convicted to be sentenced. And at this point, the state court, our state law, Commonwealth law, does not.
It almost sounds like we're playing catch up. And I'm going to talk more about that in just a moment. But since we're talking about statistics and frequency, Rhonda Hedrickson, Central Pennsylvania, the YWCA, has been on this issue, exploitation, violence, domestic violence, for a long, long time. What are we looking at here in Central Pennsylvania?
Well, we know that trafficking exists here in our backyards, across all communities in Pennsylvania. But the YWCA leads a coalition of sexual assault and domestic violence centers that covers 8,400 square miles in Pennsylvania along Route 15. So we're covering traffic interventions from the southern border along Maryland, Adams County, all the way up to Tioga County, the New York line, up and down along Route 15. What we know since we started our official project in 2014 is that we've identified about 250 victims that fit the definition of a severe form of human trafficking. Most of those cases, Scott, are coming from the Harrisburg, York, and Cumberland County areas. About 75% of our cases, and most of those cases are sex trafficking cases or a combination of sex and labor trafficking. So those victims are among us. We all see them every day, but we don't recognize what we're seeing. And that's part of what our project does also, as well as intervention, is educating the community, training professionals to help us identify and recover victims.
Now, when you say we all see victims every day, that sounds like that's an incredible statement. I mean, how do we know that?
Right. It's incredible, but it's true. We are experiencing a crisis with heroin, with opioids. Many of those individuals who, folks might be treating them, whether it's a medical facility, a drug and alcohol rehab, whether it's your loved one who has that substance abuse issue, many of those individuals are being turned into human trafficking victims. You know, their addiction makes them very vulnerable. Drug traffickers, individuals selling the drugs, are getting into the human trafficking business. These folks are manipulated because of their dependency and forced into commercial sex acts. And we've seen this growing over the last, 2.5 years that we've seen this connection with many of the victims who are coming to us.
You mentioned Route 15. Is there any significance in that, and why I asked that question? I mean, obviously, it's a main north-south route, but so is Interstate 81. Is it just geography, or is there a reason? Because on Route 15, I hate to say it, but, you know, between the pornography, the adult bookstores, the dancing clubs, you know, new dancing clubs. I mean, that's part of what is along Route 15 north of Dauphin County. Well, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a lot of very vulnerable areas. The Miracle Mile, we have a lot of truck trafficking. And, you know, Route 15 really can be the passageway to the north, south, east, or west. So, and so can many other routes, of course. But just because of many of the things you just said, Scott, we've really zeroed in on that territory.
Okay. And when you talk about people who are selling drugs getting into the trafficking business too, saw a statistic that says the trafficking is now right behind drug trafficking as far as a multi-billion dollar business. You know, Shay, I want to go back to something Rhonda said that, and again, I called it incredible. I don't doubt it, but that we see victims of human trafficking every day. What should people be looking for? And if they do see someone they suspect is the victim of human trafficking, what can they do about it?
Well, I'm going to start with answering the last part of your question first. I think that if an individual does suspect that trafficking is happening and there is an emergent situation, immediately call 911. There is the human trafficking hotline run by Polaris out of D.C. That number is 1-888-37-37-888. When an individual calls the hotline, it is anonymous. They are going to ask questions about, you know, where you are, giving in detail who you might think the suspected trafficker is, you know, information pertaining to location and who you might believe is the suspected victim. But again, if there is an emergent situation, obviously call 911 first. Now, what signs to look for? I think that there are, you know, global signs, but if there is a question as to whether or not you think that trafficking is happening in your particular township or in your county, if you have, and you were very clear about this, you know, the relationship between sex trafficking and strip clubs and pornography, if you have commercial sex happening in your jurisdiction, you probably have human trafficking as well. And how does commercial sex present to the general public? It presents in the form of prostitution. And so I would be really irresponsible if I said that every prostituted person is a victim of trafficking. The CSE Institute takes the position that they are being victimized by commercial sexual exploitation, which is not necessarily the same thing as sex trafficking. But what we do know about the crime of sex trafficking specifically is that traffickers are in the business of making money. The commodity that they're selling is a human being for the purposes of sex. But if you have a commercial sex situation in your township or in your county, traffickers will capitalize on that, and they will move in to meet the demand for commercial sex with their supply, which is a human being. We also know that nationally, there is a trend for younger and younger victims to be purchased for sex. And if, again, you have commercial sex happening in your jurisdiction, it's pretty likely that you've got sex trafficking happening as well.
And we'll be speaking with Representative Seth Grove of York County in just a moment, who has introduced a bill that would strengthen the penalties against human trafficking in just a moment. But before we do, Jennifer, I want to ask you about the safe haven law that was mentioned here. This is something that, again, and I want to go back to this and a little bit later in the program, is that it feels like we're playing catch-up here because these laws are all relatively new. What's the safe haven law?
And I wanted to address that concern because you're absolutely correct. I mean, we didn't even have a definition, a separate crimes code for human trafficking until 2014. So we are playing catch-up, which is part of the reason we don't have the statistical data and the representation as robustly as we do in other areas because we haven't been tracking it. So what we had to first do was we had to first define human trafficking and then set up a separate crime code for it. So we did that with Senate Bill 75, which is now Act 105 in 2014. Then we came along and said, okay, we've got to start identifying these victims. Unfortunately, what we've done for far too long is we've criminalized victims. And where we've seen the most criminal behavior is in the juvenile system, where, you know, minors were being arrested for what was being called prostitution, which always made those of us in the know want to bang our head against a wall, because how can a young person who can't consent legally to sex be charged with prostitution? It never made sense. But yet they were being thrown into the juvenile justice system and treated like criminals, charged, put in detention facilities, and not given the supportive services that they truly needed, and not identified as victims. So what Safe Harbor really did is it said, okay, we're done with this. It's not productive, it's not healing, it's not helping anyone. All we're doing is further harm to these individuals. We're creating criminal records, which, as we all know, sets up that cycle of engaging criminal behavior, because once you've got a criminal record, it's incredibly hard to then move into a place where you can be a productive member. So Safe Harbor really says, okay, you're not going to criminally charge these individuals anymore. There's an identification process to show that they are indeed a victim. And then it's the supportive services. It's connecting them to the local resources like the YWCAs, the rape crisis centers, the human trafficking resources that we are now starting to robustly build in the Commonwealth.
All right. As you said, it used to be treated as a criminal offense. And that's where there may be some confusion here between human trafficking and, let's face it, prostitution. Mm-hmm. There's a reason it's called the world's oldest profession, that it has almost always been looked upon as a criminal offense here in Pennsylvania. Yep. How, you said there was a process to go through. I hate to put it this way, but how do you know the difference between, or how is it a difference determined between someone who is voluntarily, I don't know whether someone does that or not, works as a prostitute, and someone who is forced into prostitution?
I think, well, what the Safe Harbor law did is it really looked at those 18 and under, right? So let's take the obvious population, the
who cannot consent
to sexual activity, and say, clearly these individuals are being coerced, manipulated, used in some way. And then when you look at adults, you've got to look at the cases. Is there drug involvement? Is there an aggressive pimp? Is there a known trafficker? Where are they frequenting? Safe Harbor really put the focus on the victims. What this new bill is doing is putting the focus where it needs to be, and that's on those sex buyers. Human trafficking doesn't exist unless there's supply and demand. We've really addressed the supply area. Now we're going after the demand.
And we're going to talk with Representative Grove about that in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about human trafficking here in Pennsylvania. Our guest today, Shay Rhodes, director of Villanova's Law Institute to address commercial sexual exploitation. Jennifer Storm, Pennsylvania's victim advocate. Rhonda Hendrickson, vice president of programs of the YWCA of Greater Harrisburg. And we're joined now by Republican State Representative Seth Grove of York County, who is co-author of the Buyer Beware Act. Representative Grove, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, tell me a little bit about your interest in this. Why, this is something that you have introduced before, but with a new session of the legislature, how did you become interested in it, and what do you want to see done?
Well, my legislative director is, him and his family have been advocates against human trafficking for a number of years. So it was an area he wanted to dabble in. I said, you know, go for it. You know, human trafficking's a horrible crime to humanity. It's a growing crime, and if you think our laws aren't up to par, give me a draft. He spent last session probably over a year doing some research, comparing our laws to other states. Tennessee and Louisiana have some of the stringest human trafficking laws on the books currently, and kind of modeled after that. He talked to stakeholders and put a great bill together, and brought it to me, showed me the data, and I said, you know, it's we got to do it. So
what would it do?
Last session,
What will it do?
So early on in the discussion, you discussed federal and state. We took some language that federal prosecutors have that are current attorney general and local district attorneys don't have. So we added some advertising and patronizing to mirror federal law. Under our human trafficking law, we increase the fines and penalties for those who patronize and exploit individuals who are being trafficked, basically doubling them. We changed the age of minors from 16 to 18, and then we allow minors to be recorded testimony, so they don't have to go in front of their perpetrators in the court system. So added some protections to minors in it. And, you know, the goal is economics. We're trying to go after those individuals who are purchasing exploited individuals as a commodity. So really it's going to take, you know, I feel pretty good about getting this bill passed. A lot of it comes back to the prosecutors and the law enforcement areas to take it seriously, to actually prosecute individuals under the law and, you know,
when you say,
charge them with the final fines and penalties.
When you say take it seriously, why wouldn't a prosecutor take it seriously?
So now if you look at data, and I'm sure the very articulate, well-versed ladies that you have on can verify this, but from what I see is individuals, the Johns, so to speak, those who purchase the commodities, really don't get charged with crimes. Sometimes they're dropped to ARD, so you know, you can have repeat offenders or individuals that just continually purchase, whether it's Pennsylvania or other states. So they really never get charged. You always see kind of the ladies or the prostitutes within the newspaper articles getting charged with the crimes. The guys just go unpunished.
So boys will be boys has been the attitude.
Yeah, yeah, it really has. It's just been, you know, no harm, no foul. But really, if you focus on the guys in this situation and get serious about it, you can send a message that's not going to be tolerated in Pennsylvania. You're going to be charged with severe financial and jail time if you do this. So hopefully it would be beneficial. The other aspect is within the prosecutor's office. When you look at cases of human trafficking, when you do a prostitution bust, have a conversation with the parties involved and set up protocol to actually investigate human trafficking aspects of every prostitution sting. That'll help track data, and that's the hardest part of this entire scenario. We had a testimony here in York County on this bill last summer, and one of the law enforcement officers basically said, you know, it's tough. You could have a traffic victim sent out to steal products from a large retail store, and they'll get busted for shoplifting or retail theft. That goes under the radar as human trafficking, but really their drug dealer told them to go do that because they didn't have any money and they had to pay for their addiction somehow. So having protocols within the district attorney's office to investigate human trafficking, as well as taking the crimes of the guys purchasing the commodities, I think will go a long, long way into stemming it here in Pennsylvania.
Now, it didn't pass last session, last year. Are you optimistic that it will during this session?
I am. So introduction last year was to get it out there, not to mention I didn't want to put another alternative to the safe harbor law that was moving through the General Assembly. That was the big focus, and we had to make sure we got that done before we move on to the Buyer Beware Act. So, you know, I think the work we've done to date has been exceptional in Pennsylvania, and this is kind of the last piece we need to do to really strengthen and become a real leader in ending human trafficking in the United States.
Republican Representative Seth Groth of York County. Representative Groth, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
If you have a question or a comment for our panel today, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are @smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Shea Rhodes, your thoughts on what Representative Grove is proposing?
Well, I think, you know, we're really grateful for Representative Grove's leadership on this issue, and he's extraordinarily accurate. Without sex buyers, traffickers would go out of business. They would not be able to make any money. And so, you know, I think you said something at the beginning of the discussion with Representative Grove that it's the oldest profession, prostitution's the oldest profession, and I would like you to kind of reframe the way that we all think about it like that. It's actually the oldest oppression. The harms that go along with prostitution are unimaginable. Emotional harm, the mental health harm, and the physical long-term consequences that prostituted persons suffer, even long after exiting, are unmeasurable. They truly are. I think that Representative Grove referenced sort of the dichotomy between the crime of prostitution and the crime of buying sex. It is a crime for both in our Commonwealth. And in fact, it's codified in the exact same section of the Crimes Code, which is called Prostitution and Related Offenses. And both prostitution and buying sex recidivize, meaning the more convictions you have for the crime, the stiffer the penalty. So it goes from our lowest level misdemeanor to our highest level misdemeanor. And Representative Grove was right. We have seen the numbers, and we have the latest numbers from 2017. There were 1,443 cases of prostitution in the Commonwealth. That's the crime of selling sex or being sold for sex. And that same year, 2017, we had 447 cases of buying sex or patronizing prostitutes. Yeah. What we have seen, if we dig into the actual dockets, is that the individuals charged with the crime of prostitution receive convictions. Therefore, the crime recidivizes. It recidivizes up to a misdemeanor of the first degree. By statute, the maximum you can receive if you're convicted of a misdemeanor of the first degree is 2.5 to 5 years in state prison. And digging into the dockets of those who purchase sex, we've discovered that they aren't being convicted for buying sex. In fact, they're getting ARD, like Jennifer said, or they're having their charge changed to something that is not 5902E buying sex. Mm-hmm. Rather, they're being convicted of disorderly conduct and having to pay a fine, and disorderly conduct is eligible for expungement. Same with harassment. And so if the sex buyer is not convicted of the crime of buying sex, then it doesn't recidivize, and they aren't facing that stiffer penalty that goes from an M3 to an M2 and then up to an M1. So if we do some math, and I've said this previously, if you take those 1,443 cases, and if those cases represent 1,443 people, and on one day, and I'm sure that Rhonda will jump in and agree with me on this, that if those 1,443 people had just 5 sex buyers a day, and I think 5 is a really low number, it's more like 10 to 15 to 20 sex buyers a day, but if they just had 5 sex buyers a day on one day, that means that a little more than 7,200 sex buyers got away with committing a crime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that really tells us something, right? You know, and, you know, sort of the rhetoric and the words that we choose to use surrounding this issue are really critical.
I have to admit, I just, during our break, I said to Rhonda and Jennifer that I'm measuring my words, because it's how in our society we have discussed this mm-hmm. before. And when we're playing catch-up, it sounds as if society is playing catch-up, mm-hmm. that it is not just a victimless crime, as some people would say, when they talk about legalizing prostitution, for example. We also were talking about, you know, almost everyone who works as a prostitute hasn't done it by choice. There was, Ron, I think you said it, that no one grows right. up saying, I want to be a prostitute.
Right.
That this is something that is forced on someone along the way. We have a couple questions here from callers and emailers. Anne asks, in Pennsylvania, is there a link between fake massage parlors and trafficked workers?
Well, we've certainly seen cases of it across the regions that we're covering, the 12 counties in Pennsylvania. And a lot of sex cases can also have that labor trafficking, where they're being exploited for their labor in the massage parlor, but also the sex trafficking is going on under the same roof.
Some of the industries that we have heard, labor, for example, domestic help, nail salons. Understand that, you know, there have been a number of nail salons mm-hmm. across the Commonwealth where people have been busted for labor trafficking. Have another email from Laura. Says, look for a regular arrival of a vehicle to a suspected holding house. I called and reported a horrible house after a safe was observed in the back of the vehicle and delivered regularly, where about 14 minor teens were reported. The local authorities said they had to have a reason, not a hunch. The house cleared out in 24 hours, mattresses burned, etc. Another tip. Are these people never seen outdoors? Probably another tip-off. Jennifer?
Yeah, and I think it gets back to that idea that we have criminalized prostitution for far too long. And we're trying to train law enforcement better at identifying victims. You know, we've focused on these prostitution stings where it's been lauding the numbers. And I remember back when I was at the county level, I did a bail analysis, and I saw that the highest amounts of bail were for prostitutes. And I'm like, where is the threat to the society?
Really?
Oh, yeah. You would see like $75,000, $50,000 bail on prostitution, and then domestic violence, sexual assault, ROR, are like 5,000. It boggled my mind. We really need to shift our thinking and shift it onto these individuals who are willingly and knowingly purchasing sex, with the understanding and appreciation that these individuals are underage, that they cannot legally consent, that what they are doing is committing a sex assault. They are not purchasing sex. And so that's what I like so much about this bill. It really shifts that focus. But it's going to take a mindset. And law enforcement needs to be able to be trained, as Rhonda said, about peeling back those layers. So when you're interviewing a prostitute, and I'm using air quotes for those that don't have the benefit of being
here.
It
is radio, yeah.
It's radio. So you need to have certain interviewing skills so that you can peel back those layers and discover that, okay, this is a person in front of me who's been tortured, tormented, victimized, forced, coerced, and manipulated, and then link them to the advocates in the area and try to get that person services instead of pushing them into the criminal or juvenile justice system.
Shea Rhodes, something you said earlier, you said you're seeing a trend of more Johns wanting younger prostitutes. I mean, number one, everything else aside, even if it was a relationship that was both consented, a consensual relationship, it's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So what's with that? I mean, that was one of the things that that stood out to me about what Representative Grove is proposing here, that it does address minors in it as well.
Yes, it does. And I just want to be very clear. There is no such thing as a child prostitute. She's a victim of rape, sexual violence, and by both state and federal law, a victim of human trafficking, irrespective of whether or not she has a trafficker, meaning that pimp or that third-party control. A child who's being purchased for sex in our Commonwealth is, by legal definition, a victim of sex trafficking. And, you know, Jennifer mentioned something about, you know, decriminalizing the crime of prostitution. And we advocate for what is called the Nordic model, where the focus of criminalization is shifted over to the sex buyer, the one who has the culpability, the one who is inflicting and perpetuating the harm caused. And the prostituted person, rather than being arrested and charged with a crime, is then offered robust social services and a clear path to have exit strategies in order to not have to be sold for sex or sell sex anymore. I would argue that it is not work. For adults as well, it's exploitation. And I am hoping that this particular piece of legislation, House Bill 12 and the companion bill in the Senate, Senate Bill 60, will really take Pennsylvania one step further in recognizing that sex trafficking and commercial sex are demand-driven, and that's where the culpability is, it's where the criminality is concerned, and we need to really stop talking about Johns and that boys will be boys, and I'm using Jennifer's air quotes here, but they're sex buyers and mm-hmm. they're committing a crime.
We'll be talking with some of our callers in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're discussing human trafficking in Pennsylvania. Our guest today, Rhonda Hendrickson, Vice President of Programs of the YWCA of Greater Harrisburg, Jennifer Storm, Pennsylvania's victim advocate, and Shea Rhodes, Director of Villanova's Law Institute to address commercial sexual exploitation. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's go to Annette in Harrisburg. Annette, you're on the air.
This is a really good discussion, and I really appreciate bringing to light to the general public just how pervasive this problem is. However, most of the people that are listening really don't think that this is happening in their family or around them. Pornography is a huge problem with feeding the demand for sex trafficking. Maybe you could discuss that. And also, just as a common person, somebody with a family, how they can be on the lookout for signs that their own children might be falling prey to predators. I'll leave it with that.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. And this kind of goes back to what we were talking about right at the very beginning of the program, that many people here in Pennsylvania, here in central Pennsylvania, think of this as something that happens other places. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I understand that Pennsylvania is a hotbed, so to speak, for human trafficking is because of our transportation system. We are considered a pass-through state. We have the interstates. We have Route 15, US 15, I-81, Pennsylvania Turnpike, I-80. So, we're within, we use this in business terms, we're within, a 3-hour drive of 10 million people or something like that. Anyway, that's one of the reasons that it does happen. And I also understand that in rural areas, it happens because it's not noticed as much. So, Rhonda, everyone thinks of central Pennsylvania as this conservative area where, and one of the reasons we like to raise our families here is because it's safe. These kind of things don't happen here. Apparently, they do.
They do happen here, and the average age for a child to be lured into sex trafficking specifically is between the ages of 12 and 14, and I bet many of our viewers know a child or have children between the ages. And how do traffickers get to them? Well, one of I think the scariest things that happens is that traffickers will look for the kids who might not just fit in. And they'll befriend them. They'll develop romantic relationships that are strictly for the purpose of recruiting this child into trafficking. And what happens is the child, or even adults this happens to, have no idea that they've become a trafficking victim. They're out selling commercial sex because they want to help this person pay their rent. Or all of a sudden, their boyfriend had problem making his car payment, and, hey, honey, if you love me, I know how we can make some quick bucks, and you can help me pay my motorcycle payment, my rent payment. And victims often come to us, and they can't self-identify that they're a victim of trafficking, even when you explain it, because they love this person.
They wouldn't do anything like that with me, right?
That's what they think. And that's what they're coerced. They're manipulated. The psychological manipulation that goes on with victims is usually and often much more extensive than some of the physical brutality that can happen in trafficking cases.
Mm-hmm. And oftentimes they're given drugs, right? So they're lured with alcohol and drugs. They end up becoming dependent. And then the only way that you can continue your drug addiction is, well, you've got to go out and make the money in order to sustain your drug addiction. It's also how they numb young people into being able to tolerate, as Shay disgustingly said, 5, 10, 15 sex buyers a day. That's 5, 10, 15 rapes in a day. And so oftentimes they will anesthetize them with drugs, opioids, heroin, crack, cocaine, just to keep them numbed out and zoned out enough to be able to tolerate that. Mm.
Shay, getting back to Annette's first question, though, when she called in, the role of pornography in all this.
Well, it's, I hate to phrase it like this, but it is a gateway. I was listening to a webinar a couple of summers ago by a scholar from, I believe it was Boston University. I might be wrong. I do know that it was an academic higher education up in Boston who's been digging into pornography and who watches it and how often it's watched. And in her studies, she discovered that the most common age that young boys were watching pornography, again, because of the advent of the smartphone and everyone has one immediately at their disposal, is 9.
Phew.
9 years old, boys are being exposed to pornography. And the normalization of violent sex that's being depicted in pornography is something that we really need to take a good hard look at, because it does fuel the sex trafficking industry and the belief that you can purchase another human being for sex. Men are not entitled to buy sex, yet the porn industry and the strip club industry really pushes them towards feeling it is normal, it's just something that's acceptable and okay to do. And I've heard, you know, anecdotally so many times, well, I wouldn't want my girlfriend or I wouldn't want my wife or the mother of my children to do X, Y, or Z sex act. So I pay for that. And I think that the porn industry truly does fuel that. There is so much violence depicted in porn, and it's become normal. And it's not something that I believe myself, my friends, anyone that I've talked to believe it is normal intimate sexual behavior. And we really need to start having conversations with our boys and our girls young, like pre-junior high, when we know they're seeing this and when we're talking about gender norms and what is okay. This is a conversation that we just, it's a difficult conversation, but it's just one that we need to start having with our kids when they're young, when they're forming their ideology of what's acceptable and what's not.
Let's go to Hazel in Lebanon County. Hazel, you're on the air.
Hi, I have a question for the panel. Jennifer, ironically, I just finished reading your book yesterday.
Thank you.
And I have a,
which
I
one?
Have a question. Blackout Girl.
Oh, okay. The first.
Yeah, the first one.
Okay.
So I have a question about the training. You had mentioned that you are, or that the state is focusing on training police officers and kind of making them vigilant about the possibility of trafficking with these girls that are committing crimes and boys. But I've had some work with kids in foster care and at risk youth, and I was wondering if judges and the DAs are having adequate training about this as well, because they're the ones that set the bail, and they're the ones that press charges on these young girls and boys.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much for your call. Jennifer, I think that was addressed to you. That probably what you talked about a little earlier with when you were in Dauphin County, mm-hmm. that the bails were being so high, set so high for women who were arrested for prostitution. But her question specifically was about training.
Yeah.
It would sound as if we've kind of agreed that we're playing catch up here. Is there training? Are law enforcement officials being made much more aware of this?
I think so, and I'm going to address it quickly, and then I'm going to throw it to Rhonda. But we do now have regional task forces on human trafficking, and so we have bodies coming together. You know, I think we've heard of these task forces more with domestic violence, sexual assault, mm-hmm. or like multidisciplinary task forces. But we've got entities now coming together, law enforcement, prosecutors, advocates, scholars, to talk about these issues, to identify cases. And in those task force meetings, obviously, education occurs and awareness occurs. We've got some phenomenal judges in Philadelphia who are doing brilliant work in this area, where they are diverting children from the juvenile justice system into what we call this kind of safe harbor, this place where we're surrounding them with resources, we're decriminalizing their behavior, and we're treating them like the victims they truly are. But I'll let Rhonda talk about the regional task force here locally.
Mm-hmm. Right. So here locally, we do have what we call the South Central Human Trafficking Response Team, and that's a collective of six contiguous counties here. They come together periodically throughout the year, and we really talk about what is being seen across those regions, how we can collaborate together. We provide educational pieces from experts in the field at times during those meetings. So it's really opening up those lines of communication, because our victims don't just stay in one location. They are very transient. In our PATH 15 project at the Y and with our partners across Pennsylvania that are part of our collaborative, we also go out and we train our law enforcement officers. And we will go in to every roll call they have over a period of time and work with those officers on what does trafficking look like? What should you expect to see? And it's not always, you know, what comes to mind. People have a preconceived notion of what trafficking looks like, and we need to dispel those myths. It's very different, I think. We've had law enforcement say to us, I ran across a case. We had one in Harrisburg, in Uptown Harrisburg, a little while back, and the officer said, I had the training, and it really still shocked me that this is what was uncovered. So, you know, continuing to educate, continuing to raise awareness, working with our youth in the school systems, having parents work with youth at home on what is a healthy relationship look like, what is healthy sexuality. You know, we've got to keep pushing those conversations right up front with children as young as, you know, when they're ready to receive that information or start asking questions.
But you see, something you just said, Rhonda. You said that we've got to get away from these stereotypes that we have. I led in with my introduction saying that many people think of this as a big city or a problem that occurs overseas. Do we have people being trafficked here in Pennsylvania that are from overseas? I mean, that we actually have foreign traffickers coming into Pennsylvania.
Well, we definitely have foreign nationals who have been recovered. And for a while here in Dauphin County, we had just a repeat discoveries of victims in hotels who were left there by the traffickers to work the hotel. They spoke very little English, had no documents with them. The clothes they had with them were, you know, a suitcase full of lingerie. And they were told to stay in that hotel until they had enough money. If they didn't, they were beaten and left there to make more money. And they were picked up in what we've referenced here as the prostitution stings. And, you know, luckily we do have protocols in place in Dauphin County, and that those officers would call us in, or the Dauphin County Prison will call us in, and we'll do the screening on that victim. We'll talk and peel back those layers, and we'll get interpreters in, and we discover that these individuals were brought to this country under false pretenses.
But where are they going to go then? I mean, I think that what you're doing is obviously the right way to go. But what, you know, someone who may be 12, 13, 14 years old, what do they do afterwards?
Well, are you talking with our foreign national victims or just in general?
I'm talking about both.
Right. So obviously, you know, if we're recovering a juvenile or part of that, we're working with children and youth agencies. And what we've seen with the juveniles is most of the juveniles that have been come through our program have been runaways from foster care. And typically there's some kind of, for lack of a better word, like a runaway warrant out for that juvenile. So here we go back. They're picked up and they're detained. And then we have to go visit them in detention, and they want to know what they did wrong. So, you know, the harm that we caused prior to passing some of this legislation is real.
Mm-hmm. We only have about a minute left to go. I want to thank all three of you for being with us. Shea Rhodes, in that minute, it sounds as if we are making some progress in the state, but it also sounds like we have a ways to go. What needs to happen?
Well, we need to move House Bill 12 and House Senate Bill 60 this session, hopefully sooner rather than later, in order to be able to push the conversation that we're having, not just among law enforcement and prosecutors, but just among all of us as concerned citizens, that buying sex is a crime. There are stiffer penalties in this particular bill that need to happen. And I'm hopeful that by continuing this conversation and continuing to educate people as to why sex trafficking exists in the first place, because there's a demand for it, and we can really make strides and start making a real dent in preventing it from happening in our Commonwealth in the first place.
Shay Rhodes from Villanova's Law Institute to address commercial sexual exploitation. Jennifer Storm, Pennsylvania's victim advocate. Rhonda Hedrickson with YWCA of Greater Harrisburg. Thank all three of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.